This is Mae Brussel. It's broadcast number 672, October the 22nd, and this is side two of the broadcast, or the tape cassette, if you're receiving it in the mail. Now, Fortune magazine, going back to May 31st, 1982, has a long investigative report done by a man named Roy Rowan and an investigative researcher, Sarah Bartlett. And it's interesting how the Secretary of Labor, in such an important job in charge of occupational safety and mine safety and benefits of laborers, he's supposed to be representing the laborer's interests in that department, not the ownership. And this Secretary of Labor, Donovan, has swung all of his pitch to protect the owners of the factories. And he's been very much a subject of controversy in antagonizing people in the labor movement. So therefore, it's unusual that Fortune magazine, I think it's unusual, goes into attacking Raymond Donovan, who represents, really, for Ronald Reagan, the interests of the people that Fortune magazine talks about and writes about and protects. But going back 2 years ago, they had an article, The Payoff Charges Against Reagan's Labor Secretary. And it goes into the low profile Mr. Donovan was keeping for 2 years, that there were recurring allegations of payoffs to corrupt union bosses, accusations of underworld connections that keep surfacing. And they mention Representative Orrin Hatch, Senator Orrin Hatch of the committee investigating, the Labor Committee in Congress investigating Donovan, which is like a fox watching the chicken house to have Orrin Hatch there. Now, Orrin Hatch did make a statement. He passed on Donovan, even though there's a lot of information about him at the time of the confirmation hearings. And what he said about the Secretary of Labor, he said, "I have to tell you, if any of these allegations prove to be true, it'll be a miserable experience for everybody concerned." Orrin Hatch, they said, an upright Mormon who wants re-election, who wants Reagan's support, had to go ahead and say that Donovan had a clean slate. But he said, if any of the allegations prove to be true, it will be miserable. Now, the minute Raymond Donovan was arrested, the very first person whose picture was in all the newspapers was Orrin Hatch. Not saying, "I warned 2 years ago we could have trouble," or "I told the president to get rid of him." He said, "This is political. This is a Democratic DA in the Bronx. They're only doing that because they're Democrats and the Republicans are running for re-election and for election." And he made it a political thing that was happening in the indictment when it should have happened 4 years ago with all the tapes of the various crimes that I listed. So the Fortune magazine talks about the links of the Schiavone Corporation, and they do quite a good job of all places. This isn't Nation or New Republic or some of the People's World or what you think the left coverage should be or think it is. It never is. And it takes these conservative kind of papers like Barron's on Mark Rich, or somebody keeps sending me those wonderful articles on that. And Fortune has this article. You can check it out and have copies made at your local libraries. It tells about his relationship with the confessed mafia soldier and hijacker and drug trafficker Pellegrino Maselli, otherwise known as William Maselli, how the Schiavone Construction Company worked with them, that they hired Maselli in 1977 as a subcontractor. And then it says the Fortune learned that there were references to the 1979 Super Bowl in which Maselli was there and had entertainment for Donovan and the Schiavone officials. And there were conversations with the mobsters of washing money through the Schiavone Corporation Construction Company and the use of vouchers ranging from $10,000 to $50,000. It goes on to say the FBI failed to inform the Senate that there were 90 hours of tapes, actually 6 months of tapes, with references to Donovan and his company. And Frances Mullen, the FBI Executive Assistant Director, said there was no reference to Donovan in the New Jersey wiretaps. The wiretaps were actually in New York. So this is the way they covered it. Mr. Mullen, I've said before, is very controversial. There were allegations he was linked to the crime syndicate in New Orleans before Reagan appointed him. And, of course, Donovan was in New Orleans until 1952 at that seminary, ready to be a priest before he latched on as vice president of the Schiavone Construction Company. The Fortune article tells about Maselli's ambitious plans, peddling the synthetic cocaine, how he ran a meat supply company in the Bronx. That's before his friend Raymond Donovan hand wrote a check for $200,000 and then $1 million to get him started. I mentioned that last week. And it goes into the Genovese contacts at the game, and not only in Miami at the Super Bowl was there Mr. Maselli and the mobsters with a group of high people from the Schiavone company, but down there was Mr. Joe Bugliarelli. He's Joe Bugs Bugliarelli, riding around in his Rolls Royce down there at the Super Bowl. The mafia sidekick of Maselli, who also is a defendant in this particular case for killing Mr. Frasconi, their competitor, and getting him out of the way to take over the company, the Joe Pell company. Joe Bugliarelli is a defendant with Maselli. They were down at the Super Bowl game. Now, Fortune goes into the Secretary of Labor, who's supposed to enforce labor racketeering laws, and he himself is being named through links to the Genovese family, informers, and so forth, of doing what he's supposed to be protecting, and is named in the wiretaps that were sequestered away, never played in court, and the FBI kept this secret. The Fortune magazine says, submerged in the files, the FBI officials reported when Raymond Donovan was confirmed as the Secretary of Labor, that the Bureau employed 62 agents, 8 supervisors, 49 character witnesses. They did a complete background investigation. They didn't say they did a clearance. They did a background investigation. They described Donovan as conscientious, capable, dynamic, responsible, and hardworking. Well, so was Adolf Hitler, and so was Klaus Barbie, and so was Mr. Rudolph at Punemund, and Mr. Walter Dornberger at Bell Helicopter. They were conscientious, capable, dynamic, responsible, and hardworking. But the investigations weren't supposed to look into the adjectives. They were supposed to look into crimes. The FBI had a special inquiry unit called SPIN, S-P-I-N, special, S-P, capital S-P, capital I-N, and they gathered allegations, grave allegations about Donovan, and they thought that the president-elect would back off from the appointment. Now, Fortune is saying 2 weeks later, 2 years later, that they were surprised. They thought that the president would back off. Now, what is the hold there that he doesn't back off, that he is passed, and Ted Kennedy passed him, and Orrin Hatch, and Mr. Francis Mullen, and they had all of this information. Now, a large section of Fortune magazine on page 83 is called What the FBI Found in Its Files. The Senate Labor Committee dropped a good-sized shoe last week when it released some of the previously withheld FBI reports. They still cleared Donovan. Mr. Leon Silverman had a special prosecutor, and Donovan was cleared. One identified informant, whom the FBI said it had found reasonable, claimed that Donovan had a long-standing relationship with Salvatore Briguglio, Sally Bugs, in the underworld, a labor racketeer, reputed mafia hitman, a prime suspect in the murder of Jimmy Hoffa, who was the controversial head of the Teamsters Union and disappeared in 1975. Briguglio was suggested as the person. This is going back besides William Taub's book, and he's the attorney for Hoffa. And they used Mr. Picardo, again, who became an FBI informer, the man who used the piano wires to kill Hoffa. It tells the links of Mr. Briguglio to Anthony Provenzano in New Jersey, how he helped fix up Tony's home and put the plumbing, the shingles, and so forth. And Donovan and Briguglio took various pleasure trips together. And this is the article that the Daily News was quoting. Briguglio and his girlfriend, Joan Torino, and Donovan with a certain female known as Jeannie, who disappeared when this article was written and lived close by, traveled together and had social arrangements as well as building contracts. Fortune says, called it the murdering slime. The new allegations about Briguglio killing Hoffa come from Mr. Picardo. The FBI gave him a lie test and so forth, found him reasonable, and he's the guy, as I say, that worked with William Taub. He's a paid FBI informant, and Donovan refers to him as the murdering slime. I heard that quotation, and I thought he was talking about Mr. William Orlando, who spilled the beans finally and told how he shot Frasconi for Maselli, and Donovan's names are on those tapes. But the murdering slime is Ralph Picardo, who told about the murder of Hoffa, and the lynx of Bergoglio, who did the murder and actually did the murder close to the Schiavone company and actually to this Raymond Donovan. He worked with Hoffa, killed Hoffa, and was close to, contracted with, and socialized Bergoglio with Raymond Donovan. Now, there's some reason, as I say, that the White House, one thing is Elaine Von Naum is very close to Roy Cohn. She has property with him in Washington. She's always had a close association with Roy Cohn. Roy Cohn's now the attorney for the New Jersey Generals, the U.S. Football League. Somebody just sent me that article from the San Francisco Examiner. Elaine Von Naum and Roy Cohn are very close, and Roy Cohn represents a good hunk of the mafia in New Jersey and in New York as their attorney. And Roy Cohn is also on the board of Western Goals, that had the $100,000 computer into the Los Angeles Police Department, along with Edward Teller and Larry McDonald. You can't separate the mafia, the computers, the data banks that go to Europe, Vienna, where Helene Von Naum is now the ambassador, from the mafia kingpins. And then that leads us to another subject I hope I have time to bring up, is the President of the United States a prisoner of the organized crime? Did the crime syndicate, such as Jack Ruby and Carlos Marcello, Sam Giancana, John Rosselli, and Tony Genovese, help kill the primary witnesses of the Kennedy assassination, help hiring people to kill John Kennedy, and the debt that was paid for the last 20 years was to let them move in and take over the Justice Department and the White House? There would be no Reagan if there was no mafia hitmen in this country. There'd be no Nixon without mafia hitmen and political assassinations in this country. The killing of John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, getting these people out of the way. They had a debt to them, and now it seems that they have to pay their debt. And whether they're exposed or not, could keep covering it up, or new ones come in, everybody now has some taint that goes to these people who have killed and kept killing in order to keep the way the power was taken silenced by killing the primary witnesses. Now, Fortune refers to 1967 and 68. This is long before Donovan. He wasn't nominated until December of 80. Picardo worked for the OK Trucking Company. Mr. Picardo, a firm owned secretly by Saul Bergoglio, the man who killed Hoffa. Part of his job, he told the FBI, was to deliver phony invoices to the Schiavone company and ask for Ray. There was only one Ray there, and that was Ray Donovan. Donovan told the Labor Committee interrogators that the Schiavone construction was never shaken down, and yet these people talked. And on the tapes that were locked up, he never knew when he told the hearings that these tapes would ever surface in any way. The primary witnesses were being killed. Mr. Farino, Nat Maselli, Jeannie disappeared, and they never thought there would be this DA in the Bronx that would demand those tapes and finally get them. Fortune goes on, a driver who sometimes chauffeured Picardo on his Friday rounds told the FBI that little Ralphie took a tuna bag, a brown paper bag that supposedly carried tuna fish sandwiches, but it was payoffs he collected from the Teamsters. And these payoffs, Bergoglio told Picardo, were to buy labor peace from the Teamster local and from people that worked for the Schiavone company. For labor peace meant that Schiavone was buying the right to use non-union labor on certain jobs. This is our Secretary of Labor, described in no less than Fortune magazine, going back to May 31st, 1982. You can look that up. The FBI told Mr. Orrin Hatch's committee and had combed the Schiavone construction canceled checks, and they found checks made to the OK Trucking Company. That's the one of Bergoglio and Picardo, the OK Trucking Company. But they said this was not Bergoglio's company, and it turns out that it was. The FBI couldn't find it, but the authors for the expose in Fortune magazine said it was. And later, the testimony of Picardo helped convict Provenzano for 20 years for the murder of another person that I mentioned, and Bergoglio was a defendant in that case when he was gunned down. An interesting story of the Reagans with Mr. Donovan, and they have a picture in the Fortune magazine from blue collar to black tie, and there you see Frank Sinatra and Raymond Donovan and Nancy Reagan and President Reagan in all their glory at a country club in New Jersey, where an insurance man named William McCann raised $175,000 for Ronald Reagan. In 1979, just before the election and before the confirmation hearings that would take place in December of 1980 and in January of 81, Frank Sinatra, Ray Donovan, and Nancy and Ronnie Reagan. A black tie collar and blue collar and black tie dinner. And it tells about Donovan, who studied to be a priest, graduated from Notre Dame in New Orleans, a seminary in 1952, worked his way up with the wealthy, put his $30 million stake in the Chiavone. He has extensive oil and gas holdings in Florida and real estate investments. Active with the Reagan-Bush campaign in New Jersey, delivered and a big hunk of money, and then went on to become Secretary of Labor. Now, the article that describes the hijacking, murder, kickbacks, bribery, political corruption by George Lardner is a long story. I've just given you a few quotes out of the Washington Post, October the 1st, 1984, and it's about how the FBI skirted around the investigations that in 1979 William Orlando set up with a team of FBI agents listening devices in the Bronx warehouse owned by Maselli. Now, I still am shocked to think that Mr. Orlando had murdered Fresconi, the competitor. By then, Maselli is in business with Raymond Donovan and the Chiavone construction, from meatpacking to the 63rd Street Tunnel subway. And then the FBI agent who killed Fresconi sets up a wiretap on his friend Maselli, and this is where they bring in the talk, according to the Washington Post, on the tapes of political corruption, particularly New York politicians. Now, everywhere in New York, there's the Genoveses, the Gambinos, and the city is dependent upon the laborers and the Catholic vote, strong Catholic vote, Irish, Italian, Catholic. And these tapes carried information about, I guess, all the population that was going to be political. And I'm sure that the hold they have on Miss Geraldine Ferraro has to do with her husband's property in Little Italy, the mafia that helped put her in, paid her debts. Mr. Rupert Murdoch is putting articles now in his London papers and in New York about the mafia connections to Geraldine Ferraro. He's the fellow from Australia and London who owns the London Times, who bought the Chicago Tribune because he didn't want any more stories about Grenade or Edwin Meese. He's not talking about Meese and Roy Cohn and Helene Van Damme and Lynn Nofziger and the mafia. He's talking about Ferraro and the mafia. But right now, it's the president that is being inspected, and they're trying to get to the Ferraro story. The Washington Post story says that there never was a single indictment. With all this information, they had those tapes from 1979 up until October the 1st, 1984. There wasn't a single indictment. The only one who went to jail out of all of it was Mr. Maselli, and his charge was hijacking and narcotics traffic. And by pleading guilty, he got his sentence reduced, and the tapes were locked up again where nobody could see them. The stories about murder were on the tapes. And they were covered up by the district attorneys, the FBI. They had all of that all this time in New York City and in Washington and held it up. The sequence of events about the FBI, according to Mr. Lardner, leave questions of the handling of the original investigation wide open. Where there is talk of the corruption, political corruption, and the New York politicians, why, they're asking now, did the FBI never go into the case? If it hadn't been for William Orlando, who volunteered to the Bronx District Attorney to talk about this murder of Fresconi, this wouldn't have opened up. The people who killed Ms. Fred Farino and Nat Maselli, linked to the Genovese family and linked to Donovan, I'll do more links of him to these families, said that these primary witnesses were murdered in June of 82 and in August 82 to protect Raymond Donovan. But what about before he was appointed into this position? This is absolute total power over our system of government. And the Washington Post article asked the question, how did the FBI do this and why did they do that? And that's what Mr. Kraft is asking in syndicated column. And there are a lot of questions that I'm asking that still are not answered. Now, I just give you, throw out the idea about Raymond Donovan and the Schiavone construction and his ilk actually controlling the president, the White House, and the president's office. At the time the Senate was investigating Raymond Donovan and the Schiavone Construction Company, the Senate Labor Committee was completely infiltrated in the spring and summer of 1982 by people hired by Donovan's company to keep track of what was being said at the hearings. One of the employees was Ralph Scherer, S-H-A-R-E-R, and another one was a Mr. Shortley. I mentioned him last week, I believe, Robert Shortley, who was a spy for the construction company. Now, Shortley was not only hired by the Schiavone company, to Ronald Schiavone, to see what the committee was saying, and Mr. Donovan, I mentioned, they spied on them, and then 2 years later they were indicted. But Mr. Shortley is the brother-in-law of Tony Dolan, who writes one of the speech writers for Ronald Reagan. The brother-in-law of the man employed by Donovan and Schiavone is a speech writer for Ronald Reagan. Another point in the Joseph Kraft article is that he mentions that the head of the Schiavone's Washington office knew Edwin Meese, Ed Rollins of the White House. He's the one that runs the computers in the campaign, the White House political staff, and Edward Hickey. Now, Edward Hickey is a security man for the president, and he received $10,000 interest-free loan from Donovan. Now, Donovan is giving an interest-free loan to a man who is now a security man for the president. Wasn't Ronald Reagan, in March 1981, speaking at a labor union luncheon at the Hilton Hotel when he was gunned down by John Hinckley and Mr. Alexander Haig from the Vatican, knighted later Sovereign Military Order of Malta, said he was the vicar and he was in charge of Washington. He'd been in charge of Nixon's White House staff when Nixon was Watergated. Wasn't, yes, it was, a labor union luncheon when the president was gunned down. A security man for the president gets a $10,000 interest-free loan from Donovan. Now, in the book Reagan's Ruling Class, put out by Ralph Nader last year, there's a list of people on his committee on the present danger, members of the administration who advise him on intelligence problems as part of national security. One of the people on that list, along with Edward Noble of the Sinfuel Corporation, who wanted to bring the Krupps, or maybe will, to this country with our tax money to go into mining, Richard Allen, James Buckley, another knight of Malta, William Casey, with his controversial mafia connections, John Connolly. This is a who's who of people that you could do biographies about for the hour, John Layman and so forth. Among the people appointed by Ronald Reagan is Edward Bennett Williams, the attorney whose office represented John Hinckley and got him off on an attempted murder charge. Hinckley wants to get out. He compares himself to Sakharov. He says, I'm a political prisoner like Sakharov. Sakharov didn't blow off the head of the press in the Soviet Union from TASS, or the person giving Pravda news, or try to shoot the president of the Soviet Union. Believe me, Sakharov isn't in for the same reasons. But the attorney for the Hinckley family is Edward Bennett Williams, who's put on the committee of present danger. Present danger to who? You know, this is very serious. And with people writing the speeches for the president, with Edward Bennett Williams, who's represented the mobsters down the line, all kinds of the organized crime syndicate. I've had his clients on the air and listened to them before. You can get it from Jim Hogan's book, Spooks. They've got a good list of some of his clients. But he's on this special committee with the top CIA spies and represents organized crime. And we have a speechwriter for the president, a brother-in-law, whose own brother-in-law comes sent from Schiavone and Donovan to spy on congressional committees. And also Theodore Geiser, the attorney for the Schiavone Corporation and Raymond Donovan from New Jersey, and they have $500 million contracts. As I said, these are not Peanut reporter Theodore Geiser wrote a suggested answer for President Reagan to give in response for press conference questions on Raymond Donovan. Is Raymond Donovan and the Schiavone Construction Company with the Genovese hitmen, the assassins, the Maselli's, the Bergoglios, you know, there's one who has now been indicted with Maselli for the murder of Fresconi, and there's the other one who killed Jimmy Hoffa. What kind of people are on the Security Commission for the President of the United States, such as Edward Bennett Williams, the attorney? Who writes the speeches and tells the president what to say at the press conference? Who gives a man $10,000 with no interest, doesn't have to pay back a loan from the Schiavone? And who's a speechwriter, the brother-in-law of the spy of the Senate hearings? Tony Dolan, the President Reagan speechwriter, his brother-in-law is a spy in the Senate hearings. How far up in the White House, how tighter can you get? You encircle him, you write the speeches, you write the answers to press conferences, you work with the security team, and you represent a person who tried to kill him. How bad is it in the White House, and what is going on? Is Reagan paying his dues for that seat? It looks so nice and comfortable. Don't believe it is. Finally, the investigations have been going on regarding this company, the construction company, because it was supposed to be minorities. The New York Times had a brief biography of State Senator Joseph Gallaber, who, according to the Washington Post, was listed as a 51% owner in Jopal, but never put a cent of money into it. Washington Post, October the 1st, that in this case, Mr. Gallaber, 51% interest and didn't have a cent. He's black, and they used him to represent the minority interest. Well, the New York Times has a story that Gallaber was working with a basketball team when he was in college, that they won the National Collegiate Athletic Association. This goes back to 1950, but a year later, the team were indicted for taking bribes and fixing points. He wasn't touched, but the other team members were. Next, he goes on to a public, highly publicized government action. He wants to work a political career. He was one of the most prominent black politicians in New York City until he was forced to withdraw from a position as the first black deputy mayor in 1974 because of legal problems involving campaign contributions. Next, he gets a nomination in the state Senate, and he's up for re-election, and he is caught again with a period where he's questioned in 1968, 5 years later, on attempt to move to the, by the city police for the Democratic nomination. They tried to remove him as controller. He was defeated for that job, but Mayor Beam wanted to reward him as the deputy mayor in 1974, and that appointment was postponed because there were charges of illegal corporate campaign contributions. That was the next point. And then Mr. Gallaber went on and had a personal tragedy where one of his daughters, one of the two, died of a drug overdose. So just when he was to get appointments in the city as deputy mayor, a black mayor, the financial shenanigans and accusations came forward. He was never indicted on any of those things, and he ran as a state senator in New York, a black state senator in the Democratic Party, and he allowed his name to be used with Raymond Donovan to make it look like a minority company. Now, these are a lot of serious charges. I've thrown a lot of information out at you, but those of you that have the tapes can play it over and over and listen to some of it. These are new names. They're not new names in terms of being in the news for a long time, but like Watergate, you'll hear more of them later. They'll become more familiar to you. The FBI, the Justice Department, Edwin Meese, and Ronald Reagan, I think, are in deep trouble with this because of the indictment and the massive charges and the tapes that will come out unless they all plead guilty and settle out of court. And he's the first cabinet member ever indicted while in office, so he can't plead guilty. So we'll see what happens with the case, but I'm going to do more on Donovan next week and his links to Watergate and past assassination teams. There's more to this story, as I said before, because they kept pushing and pushing. Had all the information before. It didn't come later, and they defended him. They had it before and insisted he be in the position, and therefore there's more to Raymond Donovan. In the meantime, this is Mae Brussel, and I'm speaking to you from Carmel, California. You save your articles on the Secretary of Labor, and we'll share more information next week.